Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Chapter 2 of Emerald City unfolds tonight on NBC. This long-awaited take on the Land of Oz is way over the rainbow and way stunning. Executive producer Sean Cassidy joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. We come down to Earth next half hour for Old Girls, Fusion special Sunday night on the School for Girls in South Africa, organized by Oprah Winfrey. Our guide, Fusion correspondent Kimberly Brooks. Also ahead, News Note Quickies, our classic trivia question of the week, and today at 65, we salute you. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Block Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Happy Friday afternoon to you and all, and welcome to the program All About Television, third of three episodes that we have been doing all week long. 48 degrees top down, you might call it Indian winter here in the New York metro area, and we are glad to have you along for a great 60-minute ride. Some super people coming your way, and we invite you to be part of the program. So if you have a question or comment for any of our guests, get the voice going, get the phone going, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open. It's another way to play in the action. And it's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our very good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is in the room. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Sean Cassidy is live with us from Santa Barbara, California, in an internet radio system after these news notes. Actually, tonight we have News Note Quickies for you. After Camelot, Real Channel's long-awaited sequel to its Emmy-winning miniseries, The Kennedys, will premiere April 2nd. Katie Holmes and Matthew Perry co-star. Planet Earth 2, delayed from launching this month over BBC America, has reset episode 1 to February 18th. That episode will be simulcast on AMC and Sundance TV. One more Sundance TV note, the network will team up with the BBC to co-produce The Split, a 6-episode scripted series by female divorce lawyers. A 2018 premiere is planned. Lemony Snicket and Sneaky Pete started their series runs on network and Amazon, on Netflix and Amazon this morning, respectively. Reviews so far, positive. And a pair of daily syndicated series are good to continue into mid-2018. Game show classic Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for season 16, hosted by Chris Harrison, and viral video clip journal Right This Minute with season 5. And that's News Notes for today. And now joining us live from Santa Barbara, California, in an area exclusive, Emerald City executive producer, Sean Cassidy. Hi, Sean. Welcome in.
Good afternoon, Simon. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. How refreshing and how relieved is it that after an incredible road to get this series on the air, that the audience and for a good chunk the critical response has been very positive?
Oh, it's great. I mean, you know, this has been a big, big show for a lot of people for a long time. Our Yellow Brick Road has been quite journeyed, and to get to this place and to be embraced so beautifully by so many people is really awesome.
Why did it take so long for such a classic of literature like The Wizard of Oz, and for that matter, the whole Oz saga from L. Frank Baum and others, to finally make it as a television series?
Well, it's a very ambitious show. It began, its infancy happened about 2 years ago. A writer by the name of Matt Arnold pitched this idea to NBC to not only kind of reimagine the first Wizard of Oz story, but to incorporate all 13 other books. L. Frank Baum wrote about many, many other characters beyond Dorothy and the Tin Man and Lion, etc., and many other kingdoms, and the idea was take all of these books, amalgamate them into one big epic novel for television and tell that story. And great idea, but it was a little rocky getting off the ground, and the original writers ended up not staying with it, and it kind of died for a while. And about a year or so ago, the studio, Universal, came to David Schulner, wonderful writer, and myself, to try and resuscitate it and bring our own spin to it, and yet keep as much as we could from the original Baum books. And we were very kind of amazed to discover how resonant so many of these stories that were written 100 years ago were today. We have a transgender character that is a story in a book that Baum wrote back in the day. We have, you know, so many themes about female empowerment and clashes of sort of science and religion, magic. So all of it felt very timely, and it felt like we felt an urgency to tell these stories now. And I think anybody that loves the original Wizard of Oz will feel like we're honoring the spirit of that, and yet anyone unfamiliar with all of the other Baum books and the stories and characters will have a thrilling discovery to make. And if you invest in the show beyond the first couple episodes, you really start to fall deeply in love with all of these characters and go on the journey. So I think it'll reward those that pay attention.
What was the marching order that you and your fellow producers gave to your writers and everyone else involved in terms of the tone of the show? Because it seems that from the reaction I've seen on Facebook and Twitter and other places, people, no matter what the critics have said, they really like the tone. They think it's just right. It's fanciful. The visuals are stunning. We'll talk about why they're stunning in a little bit. But there's a nice sense of there's darkness, there's lightness, and there's a line in between.
Well, our tone, look, it's a fairy tale. And I remind people often that fairy tales are very dark. Hansel and Gretel is a dark story. And, you know, surviving, getting the kids out of the oven is part of the challenge for the protagonist in that story. Sleeping Beauty is a dark story. Snow White is a dark story. And Emerald City, even the original, you know, 1939 musical, we all look at it kind of through rose-colored glasses because we loved it as kids. But I was terrified by those flying monkeys and that melting witch and those trees with their apples. They all gave me nightmares for a while, and yet I kept wanting to come back because the theme of trying to find your way home, literally and metaphorically, I think resonates for all of us. So in terms of the tone that we set out to establish, we wanted to not only be true to that, but in light of a world where there's so many kind of CGI-heavy, fantastical, fantasy films and television shows made, when we hired Tarsem, who was a brilliant visualist, our director, we all got in a room, David, Tarsem, and I, and said, let's try and find real magic in the world. Let's try and find places that people haven't seen on the screen before that actually have magic there organically, because we're dealing with the universe in Oz, in Emerald City, where magic is just part of everyday life. It's been repressed by this wizard who's come in, and it's a big part of our story, but we should feel it in the air there, and we should feel it in the trees and in the grass. And you know, our yellow brick road is not painted. It's the poppies from opium fields that have landed on it and canvassed it and made it a dangerous place, but also a stunningly beautiful place.
Sean, since you brought him up, let's talk about Tarsem Singh, because A, he's a person of color who is making his television debut after films and after an incredible career in music videos, one that a lot of people I'm sure remember, R.E.M.'s Losing My Religion. If there's a Hall of Fame for music videos, that's right up there. MTV winner, Grammy winner, et cetera, et cetera. This is his first television series. He is doing all the episodes. We know he's a brilliant visual designer. How did he get involved? Why did he decide, this is how I'm going to make my mark in television?
We were looking for a director that, you know, we'd written all 10 scripts, and we had the story arced out, but we wanted a director to come in and bring a visual sensibility to it that was unique and different than anything that was on television. Tarsem, if you've seen any of his films, has a very specific eye. His films resemble one another, even though the subject matter has been different from film to film. His first film was a film called The Fall, which kind of put J-Lo on the map and had Vincent D'Onofrio in it, and Vincent's our wizard, and that's not an accident. Vincent was dying to work with Tarsem again when he heard he was involved. But Tarsem, if you look at a film he made called The Fall, it is so specific and so stunningly beautiful and does a lot of what we're talking about with Oz, it became our template. And we said to Tarsem, if you can tell this story and give it the look of that film, we'll have something that really is unique. And he said, I can do that, but we were meeting him about doing the pilot. In the early going, we thought, well, you know, in a traditional television show, you hire someone to do the pilot, and they kind of set the tone for the subsequent directors. But he said, no, I want to do them all. I want to do them all like a 10-hour movie. I want to board them all, one story, and this way we'll save all the money that you usually spend going back to locations over and over again. He said, when we're finished shooting in Spain, we'll shoot all the exteriors in November because we needed warm and we needed blue skies and we needed ocean. People watch the show tonight. They'll see one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. That's in Spain. And Tarsem said, we'll do all that and then we'll never go back. So all the money we would have spent traveling, putting up people in hotels, we'll save and we'll put it in the screen. And even though NBC has, I think, spent more money on this show than any they've ever made, the payoff visually is three times the money we've spent because of the way we shot it. And I totally credit Tarsem with that. He's the one who built that beast. But getting the network on board to hire one man who'd never done a television show before to do all 10 of the most expensive show was a big deal. So David and I brought Tarsem in, and Tarsem's a very charismatic man, very charming man, very brilliant man. And he did a song and dance where he basically talks the network through every beat of this show off our scripts, and they were sold. And I give him a lot of credit because it's a huge leap of faith, because once you're in, you can't change anything. Usually television shows, you know, if you don't like the spear carrier, you can replace the spear carrier. Can't do it with this. You're in, you're in, you're in, and no going back. So we never did a pickup shot. Everything that was shot is in our show. It's pretty incredible.
Sean Cassidy, who has had an amazing career over the last quarter century or so with some of the most unique television programs, with some of the most unique people in television, including a show called Roar, with an actor named Heath Ledger, who became a legend in an amazing way, an Oscar winner after he passed on after The Dark Knight. Well, he's with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. His latest effort is Emerald City. Chapter 2 is on tonight at 9 o'clock. On your local NBC station. Sean joins us live from Santa Barbara, California, excuse me, this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise, the show all about television, now in year 10. Simon Applebaum, leading from the other coast, New York, 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you are with us. You have a question or comment for Sean? Give us a call, 646-652-2906, and be involved. And we want to welcome everybody who's joined us in our chat room, such as 1044, 1059, other people as well. So get involved. We want to hear you. Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, we have a special show on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We kick it off with a look at GSN's first new game show of the year. It premieres next week. It's called Divided. Check out the premise. Three total strangers of different backgrounds get together for a quiz. They must agree on every answer in order to win or lose money. And at any point in the game, they can stop and get their winnings. But here comes one of two big curveballs. The big curveball number one, they must divide the money unequally. What's the second? We will have five-time Emmy Award winner, or Emmy Award nominee, Jay Weinstock of The Apprentice fame and other shows, and The Voice. He will be with us to tell us what that other curveball is and much more. Jay Weinstock is our lead guest on Monday. And then I'll introduce you to the co-founder of a company that's out to showcase female entrepreneurs of color. And they're doing it starting tomorrow night on Centric, the sister network BET, with a show called Queen Boris. Marcy Weisler will be with us. It's all coming up on Martin Luther King Jr. Birthday Day, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. As we know, there's a lot of diversity behind the camera, but there's also, with Emerald City, Sean, a lot of diversity in front of the camera.
Well, you know, we were given carte blanche to hire people from all over the world, and we weren't limited by ethnicity or accent or anything. We were just told, find the best actors, find the best crew, find the best director, and we did. And the fact that we landed with a cast and crew that happens to look like the United Nations is just great. I wish the world were as representative of the balance of it all as Oz is, as our Oz is. Hopefully we'll get there. But again, you know, it's just talent won out. You know, Audria, our Dorothy, is half Guatemalan, half Puerto Rican. She grew up in Miami. And she came in, and, you know, we read hundreds of actors for Dorothy, and she came in, and she just dazzled us. And she said, are you really serious about me in this part? And we said, absolutely, 100%. She said, but you know I'm Latina. And we said, yes, we figured that out. And she said, was it written for Latina? I said, no. No part was written for any ethnicity, but you're the best actor, so you get the part. And, you know, I'd like to think everything should be cast like that. It doesn't always happen, unfortunately, but we're really blessed.
So we got some chat room reaction, one from Jeff, who just joined us, said he loved the opening episode to our episode last Friday. Sean and company hit it out of the park. So good. And Donna, who just joined chat room, said, I will faithfully watch your show every single week. He also loved one, and I did too, one of your previous efforts, American Gothic. Check it out, by the way, if no one has. That's Donna's words. Donna and Jeff, thanks for being with us in the chat. If you want to give us a call, please do so. And everybody else, join in, either phone call or be in our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. What's it like to work with Vince D'Onofrio, somebody who has had an incredible – I still remember way back in mid-1980s when he played a very interesting character on The Equalizer. He seems he's had this incredible run of offbeat roles and even, of course, his great role on Law & Order: Criminal Intent. He's just an outstanding actor and looks like he's hit out of the park again.
Vince, it's amazing. I mean, you know, I go back – with Vincent as a fan to Full Metal Jacket with Stanley Kubrick, and I'm sure a lot of your people listening remember that performance. It was a terrifying performance and brilliant performance. And as I said earlier, he had worked with Tarsem on a film called The Cell back in the day, and when he heard that Tarsem was directing all of these Oz books, he called him and said, I want to be your wizard. And we were like, awesome, let's talk about it. And he started talking to David about how he envisioned the wizard. And, you know, the wizard is, you know, like the original from the film and the books, is a fraud. And he was portrayed in the 1939 musical as the man behind the curtain. But Vincent said, I want to be something different. I want to be a small, scared man internally, but I want to create this big sort of hambone actor persona that he literally modeled. He, the character, modeled on Orson Welles and John Huston. And he was a – if the people – again, if you watch all 10 episodes, around episode 6, we tell the origin story of the wizard, and you find out who he really was and how he invented this persona for himself. And you realize that you have a brilliant actor in the form of Vincent D'Onofrio playing a bad actor in the form of the wizard, who's impersonating a John Huston, Orson Wellesian character wearing a bad wig, trying to impress people as a demagogue. Any comparison to anyone living or dead is purely accidental, of course.
You mentioned earlier, Sean, that one of the things you wanted to do was not just reflect The Wizard of Oz, but the other Oz books that L. Frank Baum wrote. And for those who don't know, after he passed away, I think it was like 1918, 1919, a woman named Ruth Plumy Thompson continued the Oz saga, so did other writers. In fact, there were still Oz books published on a regular basis as like late as I understand the early 60s. Of all the characters that are not in The Wizard of Oz that you showcase on this series, is there any one character that you were very excited about showcasing or any character you wanted to bring to life?
Yes, many, 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 many. I mean, the people that want to come to the party to see the lion or see the Tin Man or our Scarecrow, we deliver on that. You'll have them, but they arrive in different forms. We've already seen that in terms of Oliver Jackson Cohen's character. In the first episode, Dorothy finds this soldier who's basically been hung up, crucified, left to die, and she cuts him down, and he's lost his memory. Well, he's lost his brain, right? So, oh, there's the Scarecrow, right? And our Tin Man is coming. He's introduced, I think, next week. You'll meet him for the first time. But how he's introduced and how he became the Tin Man is part of our story, and our lion has an equally interesting backstory to discover. But beyond those characters, there is this world of other characters that were in books. Tip was introduced at the end of our second episode, and he actually has a very interesting story. Tip was born a girl, but she was, as we'll learn through in the episodes, the story has not been told yet, but she ended up being kept by a witch named Mombi. And Mombi gave her a medicine to turn her into a boy and raised her as a boy. And it's only when she escapes from Mombi, he escapes from Mombi, that he becomes what he originally was, which was a girl. But she identifies with a boy. So it's a very contemporary story about gender identity. And again, one that Baum crafted 100 years ago. There's another brilliant character named Langwidere, who is Princess Ev, Lady Ev. And she, in the books, used to replace her head every day, put a different head on. Well, we couldn't quite pull that one off. Our version of Langwidere wears a different mask every day, and she's concealing something that will be revealed, I think, in Episode 9. Fantastic character, fantastic actor, Stephanie Martini. Jordan Loughran plays Tip. I think by the end of our 10 episodes, the audience will have fallen in love as much with these new characters as they are with their old familiar ones.
Emerald City executive producer Sean Katz is with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. And this series goes into chapter number 2 tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local NBC station. If you have a question or comment for Sean, get it through at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And for those of you that are joining us for the very first time on the program about television today, hope you'll join us a week from today because we'll talk about the first new television network to launch on Comcast cable systems around the country next week. It's called Kids Central. It's one of two new networks that cable operator will do this month. And we will have the president of Condesa Networks, the folks behind Kids Central, Jorge Fiera, will be joining us. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You had an amazing career, Sean, of doing some of the most offbeat television that's been produced. American Gothic, we mentioned, Cover Me, which I enjoyed when it was on USA Network. Invasion on ABC, a show, Hysteria for Amazon. Do you mind if people say that you like Mr. Offbeat Television or that your career has gravitated toward the offbeat?
I really don't know how that's happened. I think it's my taste. I mean, I like stuff that's different. All of my shows as offbeat or, you know, dark, I guess a lot of people thought they were, but they've all been kind of secret family dramas. I just sort of bury the lead. You know, you put the shark on the poster, and then you tell the story of the sheriff and his family on the beach. That's kind of my trick. The aliens are landing, but I'm really more interested in how do you deal with that new stepfather in your house, you know? And and in a way, Emerald City is sort of in that ballpark, too, because it is really a big family drama. They're all connected literally or figuratively as family, and yet there's this heightened sense to all of it because it's a big, epic, fantastical story with magic and all the rest. I don't know. I come from a family of musical people. I grew up around musicals. Musicals and horror, interestingly, are very similar because they're all about heightened reality and they're all about timing. And music has always played a really important part of not only my career because I started out as a singer, but in my television shows. In fact, episode 4, which will air next week, I wrote, and the first song, first contemporary song, relatively contemporary song in Emerald City is introduced in that in a pretty cool way. And that's something I'm very proud of and excited about. And I think it represents, again, how much music has informed what I've done as a writer, even in the scary stuff.
And, of course, you should point out that your parents are Shirley Jones, the wonderful actress, Oscar-winning actress to Elma Gantry, wonderful musical performer, and Jack Cassidy, who was in a wonderful series called He and She with Richard Benjamin and Paul Prentice. Did a wonderful job in that.
Simon, you know your television.
That's right. Thank you. It's so easy, you know, to ask you about what you did before getting into television on the behind-the-scenes side with the Hardy Boys, with having a number one hit to your credit with the new Run Run, your cover, and That's Rock and Roll, and so on. And by the way, Donna came back in the chat room to say that you sound exactly still like your half of the Hardy Boys, Joe Hardy. But I want to ask you about another show you were involved in. But let's ask you about another really terrific show you were involved with that had a very short run and deserved a lot more, and that's Breaking Away, the wonderful adaptation of that Oscar-winning movie that Steve Tennis wrote. I love that series. I really think that this is one that ABC, which ran it on Saturday nights, like Get Away.
Breaking Away is a little gem of a show that not too many people saw. It didn't run very long, but came on in 1980. I was like 20 years old, and it was everybody's favorite new show of the season. But it was a very soft show. You know, it was based on the film, Steve Tessich's beautiful film, about this family in Bloomington, Illinois, and kid sort of idealized himself as an Italian bicyclist and wanted to win all these bike races. And we quickly found you really couldn't do the bike race of the week, so you had to get into the kids and the characters. And we got all these glowing reviews, and the show didn't last. But one of the reasons it was so important to me, aside from the experience as an actor, was our showrunner was a 23-year-old writer by the name of Glenn Caron. And Glenn, after Breaking Away, went on to create Moonlighting and subsequently created Medium and wrote and directed some really terrific films like Clean and Sober with Michael Keaton. And I had the opportunity, because I was 21 or 20, whatever I was, both of us were really young, kind of, you know, in the leadership roles on this show. And I used to go into the writer's room with Glenn and sit and watch that process, and I'd kind of soak it up, and I realized even then that writing and producing was much more creatively invigorating to me than acting. So I just got on that path, and I really, it's funny, I had dinner with Glenn just the other night, and I told him so. I said, you and Glenn Larson, who produced the Hardy Boys, Glenn was not the writer Karen is, but he was a brilliant producer. I mean, he had like 10 shows on at the same time, and he taught me a lot about that, all about, you know, sort of the salesmanship of being a producer and how to manage a budget and all of the sort of behind-the-scenes stuff that isn't as creative necessarily, but you have to kind of get a handle on if you want your scripts to be turned into television shows that people want to make. And I've never looked back, and I feel really grateful that I was able to transition, but it didn't happen right away. It took a while.
Well, sure, it looks like Emerald City is off to the races. It was a very crazy road for 2 years to get it on, but finally it's on, and it looks like it may be on the way to having not only a wonderful run, but a long run too. Emerald City, Chapter 2 is tonight, 9 o'clock, on your local NBC station. Check the link for where that station is available in your area. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.nbc.com. It's www.nbc.com. And if you have a great bookstore near you, check out not just The Wizard of Oz, but all the Oz books by L. Frank Baum and maybe some of the ones by Ruth Comey Thompson and others. I think you'll find it wonderful, wonderful reading. Sean, thank you so much for being with on this half hour. Congratulations again to you and Tarsem and your cast and crew for a great start. Like I said, a wonderful run, and we'd love to have you back anytime.
I'd love to come back, Simon. Thank you so much. Much appreciated, and say hey to everybody out there for me, will you?
Will do. You guys, hey there. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend, and good. And all the best with tonight's episode, too.
You too. See you later.
Sean Cassidy, executive producer of Emerald City, joining us live from Santa Barbara, California, this half hour on Tamavi Televised. We will have our Classic Trivia question of the week. For those of you just joining us today, stick around. You could win something. So get ready to get your thinking caps on. But first, we have a nice little thought from the fine people at Audible.com. If you're a fan of Harry Potter, you'd be happy to know that a lot of the Harry Potter books not only exist on the screen, they exist in sound, thanks to the wonderful actor Jim Dale of Scapino fame. And you can get your hands on those Harry Potter audiobooks by getting a 30-day free trial to audibletrial.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information, with over 100,000 titles, every category under the sun and then some, to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, like one of the Harry Potter ones, and a one-month trial of service. And because Audible is from Amazon.com, customer service, top of the universe. So hear for yourself what you're missing, a great sound experience that can inspire, entertain, and inform. audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised. Have a great sound experience. You'll be glad you did. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And if you are first with the correct answer, you can win the wonderful Britcom FAQ book from Applause. We're going to keep the question we started on Monday in play. And it deals with One Day at a Time, the original edition. On Wednesday, our special edition of the week, we had Gloria Calvin-Kennan and Mike Royce, the executive producers of Netflix's new version, which has gotten rave reviews since it premiered a week ago. Here's the question. Name Ann Romano's original boyfriend on the original One Day at a Time. Name Ann Romano's original boyfriend on the original One Day at a Time. And we'll take either the actor's name or the character's name. So we'll accept either one, actor's name or character's name. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure in the email you include your name and your full name and address. And again, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you just missed the question, no problem. I'll post it later today or throughout the weekend on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag at UVCSimonTWBT. That's UVCSimonTWBT. And remember, if you are first with the correct answer, you will win the wonderful book, Britcoms FAQ. It's a wonderful compendium of past and current British sitcoms and what may be happening in that medium in the future, all published by the fine people at Applause Books as part of their FAQ series. Simon Apple 04 at yahoo.com. Be in and win. When we come back, We will salute today on turning 65 this morning. But first, Oprah Winfrey is the subject of a new special on Fusion this Sunday night. It's specifically about the school for girls that she started in South Africa. All Girls is the name, and Kimberly Brooks is the correspondent, and she is with us live from Miami after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected with the best radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for The Mark Gay Show. It's fun, it's political, it's newsy, and it's all for you every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can catch the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com, and you can hear and watch various Blog Talk Radio programs, including ours, at Apple TV's iTunes Podcast app. That's the iTunes Podcast app on Apple TV. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televised this Friday afternoon of January 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live here. We had a fantastic time with Sean Cassidy. I'm Emerald C. the last half hour. And thanks to everybody who participated in our chat room, contributing to the conversation. Many of you are staying with us. I'm glad about that. We have another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. And if you have a question or comment, either get into that chat room, SimonApple04 by name, as Rip Ripper, our friend from Philadelphia, is, and Rita Snyder is also in the room as well. Or you can use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. By the way, Rita got into our chat room just now and saying that the first episode of Emerald City was amazing, beautiful scenery and costumes, another great storyline. Donna, who was in the chat room, said, be there or be square, ha-ha. So thanks for getting involved in the show, okay? Okay. Later in the half hour, we'll pay tribute to today turning 65 this morning on NBC. But right now, our next guest is someone who, in an earlier side of her career, worked at Harpo, Oprah Winfrey's production company. This Sunday night, Oprah will be featured in a new special on Fusion. It's a special about an ongoing story in her life, the girls' school she founded in South Africa. The program is called Oh Girls, and joining us live from Miami is the host and correspondent for Fusion, Kimberly Brooks. Hi, Kimberly. Welcome in.
Hi. How are you doing, Simon? Good to be here.
You too. It's great to have you. How did you decide at this time we're going to do a special on a subject that's been a part of Oprah's ongoing career?
Yeah, so the funny thing is it wasn't my idea. I actually had one of the girls that I'm close to visit me in Miami, and I brought her to work, and I ended up introducing her to my boss, and he learned, you know, how we knew each other and our connection, and he was very interested in the story. So he suggested, he was like, you know, you have this special relationship with all the girls at this school. It'd be really cool if we could do a special kind of highlighting where all of them are since they graduated. And so I didn't really know if it was, you know, my place to do this story, but I asked the girls if they felt okay with it. I asked a number of them, and then eventually I emailed Oprah and asked her if she was okay with me taking this on, and she completely embraced it. And so then we started filming in April.
How long had you worked at Harpo, and what was it like to work at that time with Oprah? I believe at that time she was still doing her talk show.
Yeah, so at the time, you know, this was 10 years ago, and I was fresh out of college. It was my very first job in television. So I was just like this excited, you know, this excited kid, because in college, you know, I thought I was going to go to medical school, and during that time I completely switched the idea in my head. I was like, I'm not going to go to medical school. I think I actually want to work in television and do something creative. So I harassed this guy to get a job at Harpo, and I was just like a kid in a candy store, just taking everything in. And she didn't know me at the time. I would just see her walk out of the show every day backstage and just pass me, and she would kind of give me a smile, and that was the extent of our interaction until I wrote her a letter. Once I heard that she was going to be going back to this school that she opened, I wrote her a letter asking her to go with her. And this is how this all got started, because she said yes.
Why did Oprah start the school?
Oprah started this school as a promise to Mandela. She had been staying with Mandela, and they were having this conversation about, you know, changing the landscape of the country, South Africa, post-apartheid South Africa. And, you know, they had mentioned that you know, the way to change the face of a country is to empower and educate girls. And he actually came up with the idea of building this school. And so because of that, she started building and constructing this $40 million beautiful school. And so it was really a promise to him. And, you know, it's an academy, it's a high school, but it's really nurturing and shaping girls to become the best that they can be, like really live and rise up to their full potential. So it's an amazing space. It really is what she's done there.
Mm-hmm. How much time did you spend in making this documentary with Oprah, and also how much time at the school?
So I was able to go to the school the very first time in 2007. And, you know, at that time I spent like a couple weeks. She was putting on an arts workshop for the girls. And I was a production assistant for that event. And then I ended up going back a second time. And then the third time I went back was in 2012 for their high school graduation. I had promised them that I would come to see them walk across the stage and graduate, which was something akin to like an outer body experience, because all of their guardians were there and all these people that care about them and, you know, all these dreams sort of manifesting in one space. It was, you know, really incredible. Like Mandela's wife, you know, was a guest speaker, and it was emotional. So, it was pretty amazing. And then I went back, obviously, for the making of the documentary and shooting one of the characters and kind of catching up with what some of the girls in South Africa are doing now. So, so that was four times for South Africa, and the making of the documentary was really a year-long project, to be honest. You know, we started in April, and then we shot the girls in the U.S., and then we filmed in South Africa in June and July, and we started editing in September, and it's finally done and ready to show. So I'm excited.
The study we're talking about is All Girls. You can find it this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Fusion, the cable and satellite network. We're talking with the person who put it together, Kimberly Brooks. She's a correspondent at that network, as also a co-anchor of various programs. We'll talk about that side of her career in a little bit. And if you have a question or comment for Kimberly, who joins us live from Miami, Florida, this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise, give us a call. The number you use, 646-652-2906. Or you can use our chat room, SimonApple04 by hand. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. A very good friend, Rick Webb from Philadelphia, is still in the room. On Monday, which is Martin Luther King Jr. birthday day, we will be with you with an hour episode, and we kick it off with a look at GSN's first game show of this year, new message today, and that is called Divided. It's a program first started in England, and it's finally being adapted here in the United States by John Naval, the person who created The Voice. Check out the premise. It's about three total strangers who band together for a quiz. They must agree on every answer, right or wrong, to either build up money or lose money. At any time during the game, they can stop and take their winnings. But then comes the first of two curveballs. We have one right now. You have to divide the money unequally. And that leads to the second curveball. And we'll leave the rest for five-time Emmy nominee Jane Bystock to join us. And with that answer, Jane Bystock, the executive producer of Divided, will join us right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Incidentally, the host of Divided is none of our very good friends, the executive producer of The Price is Right, Les McNeil on CBS, Mike Richards. Jane Bystock, our lead guest on Tomorrow We Televise. And tomorrow night, Centric, the sister network of BET, is beginning a new series called Queen Boss. Think of it as a sort of shark tank for female entrepreneurs of color. We will talk to its co-executive producer, who also has co-founded a company which produced the show, which is out to spotlight female entrepreneurs of color. Her name is Monty Weichler. We will have her live Monday, 3:30 Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Of the girls that you track who have graduated from the school, what are they doing? And how content are they with life? Can we there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I went out for a second. Say that one more time.
Yeah, so I was asking, of the girls that you tracked here in the United States, how are they doing here, and then what kind of lives are they leading?
So, yeah, so the girls that are in the documentary, four of them are actually from, graduated from colleges here in the U.S., and one of the girls is still in South Africa, but the girls here, one in Pumi is a motivational speaker, so she's literally like touring around the country and the world, you know, sharing her story. Her mother died of AIDS. She was orphaned at the age of 9. And instead of finding shame in that story, she's actually started this campaign called Share Your Story, where she's getting people to find the strength and the vulnerability in, you know, sharing something that would once be painful, but using it to empower people. So she's getting her master's at High Point University. And then you have Deborah and Tondo, who are now working at Discovery Communications. And then Vongeka, which I just think is the most fantastic story, you know, a girl who hadn't read a novel by the age of 13 when she came to the academy, graduated salutatorian from Spelman College, and is now at Oxford getting a master's in medical anthropology before she goes to medical school. So the trajectory of their lives is, like, incredible. It's really, really crazy.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to interview Oprah about this subject, and also for Oprah to see you again in a totally different role?
You know, for me, I've been saying this to people. It's like a full circle moment, you know, to be a gift services assistant at Harpo in Chicago. You know, this young girl who didn't know this woman and she didn't know me, and then to come through all these experiences 10 years later and sit down and interview her was surreal. And it's one of those things that even saying it and talking about it and talking to you about it, it still blows my mind, because I'm just like, how is this possible? But during the actual interview, which was in her backyard in Montecito on her Super Soul Sunday set, which makes it even more surreal, I felt very relaxed, because that's the kind of effect Oprah has on people. She's very candid. She's very authentic and open, and speaks honest about different subjects. You know, she's very funny. So during the entire, you know, interview, I felt like we were just having – it didn't feel like an interview. It felt more like, you know, two girls catching up, just having a good time, chatting about what happens to be one of the most amazing projects that she has ever done. So I think it was really awesome for me. And I think – I hope that – you know, this the completion of this project is really like a big thank you. You know, being able to do this and having her trust me with this project, it's really my way of saying, you know, putting all this effort and hard work into it is my one way of saying thank you. Like, I really appreciate the fact that she gave me these opportunities. And just like she gave the girls education, by her saying yes to my letter, it really allowed me to expand my mind and what was possible for myself as well.
Mm-hmm. As you were putting together the questions to ask Oprah, was there any second guessing over a particular question, like, should I ask, should I not ask, should I ask, should I not ask? And you did ask her, and what was the question, and how did she respond?
I think for the most part, yes, I did come up with the questions, and then after I had, like, an idea of what I wanted to ask her, you know, I went over it with the other producers, but for the most part, there wasn't anything that I felt was off limits, to be honest. I mean, she's pretty, you know, and one thing that I've, you know, been able to be a witness to is just how, again, she's very honest. She's a not only a teacher, but a student. She's very open to learning, and I think when you have a person like that, you feel comfortable sort of talking about anything. She talks about boyfriends and relationships and sex and life, and, you know, just being who she is, I think, gave me a comfort level in being able to talk to her about all aspects of the school. So I felt pretty comfortable. I was more concerned about, you know, the timing and the order when it came to her, because I knew that we were on fixed amounts of time. So that was the biggest concern, really, just making sure I got in what I needed.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the moral of what the school has done and how these girls have turned out, whether they have settled here in the United States, whether they've stayed in South Africa, whether they've scattered to other corners of the earth?
What do I think about the role of the school?
Mm-hmm. And what it's accomplished?
I think that, you know, one thing that is interesting is, you know, it's a leadership academy, and I think what the girls are figuring out, and they're going through this evolution of understanding this, is that being a leader is, you know, many different things, and what's leadership for one girl may be completely different for another girl. But I think the Academy has done a really great job because, you know, they were able to be around all of these, you know, amazing women, and they're being nurtured holistically at every stage of their high school life. And when they come out, I think they have to understand, they have to start understanding, like, what does success mean? And one thing that Oprah has taught them is that, you know, success means completely different things for different people. Like, it's not just the diploma. It's not just going to high school. That's icing on the cake. What the real success is learning and understanding that you have choice and ownership over your own life. So whatever you choose to do, you know, even if you fail at different points, you're still successful because you have an opportunity to decide. And that's such a big deal, especially coming from a country that, you know, was where apartheid just ended in 1994. So the idea that you can have decision and choice in your own life, no matter what you choose, even if you're choosing to have babies or you're choosing to stay at home and be a mother, whatever you choose, you're making the choice. And that's something that is pretty empowering. So I think they did a good job. I think they did a good job instilling that in them.
Kimberly Brooks is the host and correspondent of Oh Girls. It's Fusion's latest original special, and it premieres this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on that network. Kimberly joins us live from Miami, Florida, which incidentally will be the home base next week of the annual NAPI convention. It's the annual forming fair that takes place at the Fountain Blue Hotel there. And if you have a question or comment for Kimberly, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. And speaking of situations involving people of color and diversity, coming up next Friday on Toronto Televised, the first of two networks that will be premiering before the end of this month from Comcast will be running. It's called Kids Central. We'll have an exclusive interview with the head of Condista, which I believe is based in Miami. Jorge Viteri will join us. Kids Central is one of the first Spanish-language television networks aimed at kids and teenagers. And it's a very interesting part of the network for primetime that involves family viewing. We'll get to all of that. The second, by the way, network that's premiering is called Primo TV. It's part of the ongoing project from the NBC Universal unit to bring on new networks from independent producers aimed at people of color. Again, those networks are Kids Central, which we will cover next Friday with Jorge Viteri of Condista, and Primo TV from Bene, the network that's currently carried on the backs of public television stations through cable or through digital signals. Kimberly, after this program, what's your next assignment at Fusion?
Yeah, you know what? I'm trying to figure that out right now. I mean, this has taken up so much of the year. So now I'm kind of, you know, researching some different stories. In the meantime, you know, I still host Nightline on Fusion every Tuesday, and I do different stories for some other shows at the network. But in terms of another big project, I'm not quite sure just yet. It's kind of a hard act to follow when you work on something that's so personal and passionate, that you're so passionate about. So I'm hoping that the next project can be just as exciting.
By the way, how is Nightline on Fusion different from, of course, the Nightline we all know it's on after Jimmy Kimmel on ABC?
Actually, the only difference is that we sort of curate the stories that our viewers see. So Nightline on ABC is a half hour. Nightline on Fusion is 1 hour. It's some of the same stories, and sometimes we infuse some Fusion stories in there too. But it's really just built for, you know, the rundown's constructed for a younger audience, stories that we think our viewers will like. And, of course, the hosts are different. It's myself, and it's also Gio Benitez, which is he's an ABC correspondent in New York. So we host it together, and just bring a little – it's sort of like a fresh take on a traditional show.
And finally, tell us where you see Fusion going this year. I know it's been a very intriguing time the last year or two with that service, which is now owned by Univision. Where do you see it going this year? What kind of developments can we expect?
You know, I think there's some interesting projects that have been sort of buzzing around the office that are in the works. But in terms of the exact direction, you know, I can't say for sure. You know, Fusion started 3 years ago, and one of the great things about this network is that it's always kind of evolving and changing. And, you know, when you have something that's brand new, it's like a piece of clay putty. Like, you're able to mold it and form it and change it if necessary and see what's working and see what's not working. So that's what they continue to do, and it's like a big, you know, experiment. You know, it's we can try anything that we like here and see what works and see what doesn't. And so this year I think is going to have some strong pieces from our incredible investigative team. We're pushing some more specials that are coming out of our department. I work for the one-hour specials department. And then there might be some new shows on the horizon as well. So just got to stay tuned, but most definitely watch for it.
Well, one thing to watch definitely for this coming weekend is Oh Girls. It's Fusion Place original special, and you can catch it this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Pacific time on that network. Check your local news for where Fusion is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online and the network online, too, it's fusion.net. That's Fusion, FUSION.net. And, of course, Oprah still has the Oprah Free Network, and you can check that out at Oprah.com. And it looks like it's going to be an amazing year coming up with more of Donald and Tyler Perry shows. And, of course, their lineup of unscripted programs like Welcome to Sweetie Pies, but also new seasons of Greenleaf, a wonderful series that premiered last year from Ava DuVernay called Queen Sugar. And I have a hunch that we may see more in the scripted arena from OWN, but more of that to come. We'll be following that as many steps away as we can. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the special Sunday night. Congrats on what you've accomplished, and all the very best in your future endeavors at Fusion.
Thank you so much. This was fun. I really appreciate you having me and pushing this forward. I hope everyone that's listening watches. I think it's going to be inspiring. So thank you so much, Simon.
You're welcome, Kimberly. A pleasure. Have a sensational weekend. Take care.
Okay. Take care. You too.
Kimberly Brooks from Fusion joining us live from Miami, Florida. Once again, Oh Girls. Sunday night, 8 p.m. Pacific time. And incidentally, a few months ago, we had one of Kimberly's colleagues dealing with a series called The Traffickers, an acclaimed series that was on Fusion. And if you want to hear that interview that we did, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version on iTunes or Apple TV under the iTunes podcast app. A couple more news note quickies for you. We have some sad news. William Peter Blatty, the author of The Exorcist, he won the Oscar for the adapting for the film, and of course, The Exorcist was the inspiration of the Fox series that was on Friday nights this fall. He passed away earlier today at the age of 89. The announcement was made by the director of The Exorcist, William Friedkin. And also this Sunday night, The Simpsons does its first hour-long episode on Fox. Incidentally, Matt Selman, the executive producer of The Simpsons, is going to have a conference call with reporters at the top of the hour. And we understand that it's going to be one of the first episodes that's going to feature a big hip-hop score. And I look forward to asking about it once we get off here. Today's also a very special day about today. Until January 13th, 1952, when it came to television in the mornings, when TV was black and white, there wasn't much on, not on the national level. And if there was, it was on the local or maybe regional level. And then NBC, with a brilliant man, one of the great seers of the medium, Sylvester Pat Weaver, changed all that 65 years ago today with today. The first national morning program on a broadcast network, or any network for that matter. 2 hours, Monday through Friday, here in New York at Rockefeller Center, of live news information. It was hosted by one of the great communicators of this medium at all time, Dave Garraway. In a clear, direct voice, no one could talk to the camera like him. He got you through from 7 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time what was going on and made sense of the world and gave you some entertainment and some inspiration, too, before you went on your way. A lot, of course, has changed in television over the last 65 years, including the fact you have more TV options in the morning, all inspired by today. But today is still around, now hosted by Matt Lauer and Savannah Guthrie. And, of course, today, this morning, was the big 65th anniversary. And I'd like to congratulate today on what it's done. I watched today when it was had Gallery as the host. And, of course, it had a wonderful group of hosts and people involved over the years. Hugh Downs, Barbara Walters, Florence Henderson, Frank McGee, Jim Hartz, Jane Pauley, Deborah Norville, Katie Couric, and so many more. And now, of course, today is a four-hour show, as well as on the weekends, but it continues to be the gold standard in terms of getting people up in the morning, informed, entertained, inspired, and on their way. And everything else that's come along, Good Morning America, CBS This Morning, the Good Day programs on Fox stations around the country, all sorts of the Spanish language shows, SBS America, on Univision, Un Nuevo Dia, on Telemundo, and the new show just came on this week on Estrella TV. All of them have their roots in what Today did back in 1952, January 13th, 65 years ago. Happy birthday today. At age 65, you're looking great, and hopefully a lot more great things in store. Again, I want to thank our guests for not just a wonderful hour, but also a wonderful week with our three episodes. And I want to thank all of you, of course, for tuning in. Monday on Tomorrow Televised, we will be live on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And joining us will be Jay Weinstock, the five-time Emmy-nominated executive producer of GSN's first new game show of the year, Divided. Also, we'll have Marcy Weisler. She is the co-founder of a company called SWSI Media, which produces television shows and spotlights female actors of color in other ways. Tomorrow night, Centric, the sister BET network, will premiere their latest effort, Queen Boss. And next Friday, we'll showcase the first new television network of this year, Kid Central, with the president of Condesa Network, which is running that service, Jorge Pateri. It's all coming up next Monday and Friday at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. If you came in on today's show late, you want to catch up on an episode you missed, we make it so easy for you, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And you can also catch up on episodes through our podcast. You can find it at iTunes, and you can also hear and watch at Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. Either way, you can download to your smartphone, tablet, take us on the go, share it with others. Remember, you can also catch a video version of Tomorrow Televised every week on BK Live. It usually goes on Monday through Thursday from noon to 1 here in the New York area on Brick TV. That's available live 24/7 at Verizon Fios. Also available on Charter Spectrum in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and in Brooklyn, RCN and Cablevision Systems. And my segment, which usually done on Monday, usually goes on a couple days later, youtube.com/BrickTV. YouTube.com/BrickTV. Coming up on Tuesday's episode, won't be on Monday, but Tuesday, I'll have the people behind a new series that's been around the web for a while. It's called Tough Love, and they're trying to get it on television in some way. We will have the people behind that show, which is produced in New York, Brooklyn included, on the air. That's noon to 1 Tuesday on Brick TV. And you can also catch my Media Village columns about Tomorrow Be Televised. They're available at MediaVillage.com, the wonderful media analysis commentary site from Jack Myers. That's MediaVillage.com. We love hearing from you. What do you think about our program today? What's your thoughts on where TV's at, where it's going? Love to hear. So email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at this handle, at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. However you communicate, it's appreciated. Why? Because what you say matters, for sure. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants. Not only those of Blog Talk Radio, our production associate is Candace Williams. Eddie Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Tell Live is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Again, for that free audiobook and 30-day trial, audibletrial.com/televise. But Tomorrow We Tell Live, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. We're back Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. And in difference to our usual sign-off, we'll do it the way Dave Garroway used to do it when he was the first host of Today, when he raised his hand and all he had to say was, peace.